Hey everyone, welcome again to the Pipeline Podcast presented by John Deere. Tim McMaster here along with Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis of MLBpipeline.com. And we're going to get into Jonathan's mock draft that he put out on the site at the end of last week. So we'll go through the top five, six picks in the draft. We'll also get into a look back at the 2015 draft, because a lot of those players that were taken early on are off to great starts in their first full pro seasons here in 2016. But we're going to start off talking about Jason Groom and also a little bit Tyler Mondial, because these two guys went head-to-head in Camden, New Jersey last night. And Jonathan, you were there for this one. Really a great atmosphere, I think. I saw the video, sellout crowd in Camden at the old minor league ballpark there, and they also raised a bunch of money for charity. But let's start with the game itself, because both of these pitchers, obviously Groom was the big draw as the potential number one overall pick, but both guys pitched great. In fact, Groom ends up not winning the game, but both guys lived up to the hype, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's so often is the case we have this kind of marquee matchup and it ends up being 8-7, or one of the guys walks seven guys and just doesn't look that good, but both of them were on their game. The crowd was unbelievable. I mean, this far from your typical high school game, and they had set this thing up. They both had the same advisor, Jeff Rendazzo, and it evidently was his brainchild. This was on their schedule. They were supposed to play each other. So they moved the game on the schedule, and they put it in this minor league ballpark, and they each picked a charity to go to. And I really don't think they had any expectations. The place was packed, so they raised $32,000, and that was before whatever they made on the concessions. $16,000 apiece to each of these charities, which is fantastic. And it was a great opportunity for scouts to see both guys in that kind of setting. It's one thing to watch Jason Groom pitch at Barnegat High School, which is, trust me, way out in the middle of nothing. I didn't know you could drive that far east and not hit the ocean. To see them in that kind of setting, and yeah, Mondial's not as big of a name, but he's a top four or five round kind of guy, so you want to see how he does. And like you said, he won the game 1-0. It was an unearned run. And he threw very well. He struck out 10. He's a smaller guy, a little bit of effort, but a really good arm touch, 95 in the first inning. He was really amped up. Kind of emotional on the mound, shows a lot of fire. Groom's a little more composed, and Groom was just ridiculous. So he struck out 14. And, early stage of the game, struggled with command a little bit, a walk here, walk there, left a pitch up. Then he got locked in. He struck out the last eight batters he faced. And it was just stupid, at that level. The hitters didn't have a chance. They kept trying to bunt on him because it was really the only chance they had. And one of the things that we were talking about in the aftermath of the game with people that were there, and Jim, I wanted to get your take on this because I thought it was sort of interesting, because his breaking ball was ridiculous, especially once he got locked in about the fourth inning, right when he went on that strikeout tear. He was dropping his curveball pretty much wherever he wanted to. And so we were talking about that it was one of the better high school breaking balls that any of us had seen in a long time. And then we were trying to come up with other really good high school breaking balls. Kershaw, Lucas Giolito, and Dylan Bundy were the three that came to mind immediately. I talked to a scout that mentioned this year Braxton Garrett. But I'm wondering, in your thoughts on guys over the years, high school breaking balls that were as good. I know you didn't see Groom, but you've heard about the breaking ball. Who might compare?
I think Kerry Wood had a pretty unhittable breaking ball, and I mean that's going back 20-something years. But he's the one who jumps. He was the first guy I thought of when you said that. Kershaw had a good breaking ball, but I think people are more giving him credit for what it became a year or two, even so down the line. Like I remember his first spring training. I can't remember if it was against the Cardinals or who it was against, where he was just snapping off curveballs to big leaguers in a big league game. And it was good, but I don't even think it was that good coming out of high school, or at least not as good as it became. But Kerry Wood's kind of the guy who really jumps out to me.
Great stuff. And, guys, after the game, Groom actually took some time, talked to reporters. Jonathan, you were there. We had a camera there from MLB.com. So let's take a look at listen to what Jason Groom had to say about his effort, the atmosphere, and everything that was going on in Camden, New Jersey on Monday night.
Kind of set the tone. We were 5-8. You know, I got back, won our first game, came back, finished out 9-9, lost the game, and then we just came back. But, I mean, we're just taking it day by day until the final game is, and we're just going to keep winning.
Have you been thinking about where you might go in the draft?
I've been thinking about it, but like I said, it doesn't really matter to me. I just want to go somewhere where I'm well protected and feel comfortable.
Would it be cool to play with the Phillies, get selected by the Phillies?
I mean, yeah, it would be pretty awesome. I mean, I'm pretty much a hometown kid, but, I mean, I go to Citizens Bank. I used to go there all the time for games, but, I mean, it would just be a dream come true to be 1-1. I mean, that would just mean that all the hard work paid off. And I don't really go out there and just light up the radar guns. I just go out there and execute my pitches, and it pretty much works. So I'm happy with my performance I had tonight. I think as far as my command goes, I think that's pretty cool, it's pretty good. But I got to show a little bit more depth on my changeup. I mean, I'm not really getting out in front of it. Left a couple high today, but, I mean, they fouled it off. They didn't really make me pay. But later on down the road, I got to get that good depth on it. At the Maple Zone, that's where we train. I always see them up there. We were talking about it. You know, our teams won it. We played last year and they won, but I mean, there was a little bit more confidence when you have me on the mound.
All right, so from a pitcher who could end up going number one overall, who knows, he's certainly in the discussion. He's number one on the MLBpipeline.com, top 100 right now. Let's get into the draft and the top. We'll go through the top six picks in this draft. Jonathan had his first mock draft out on Friday. That's, I guess, mock 1.0 as far as we go. And then edition number two will be out before we know it. So let's go team by team, guys. And Jonathan, we started talking to you about Jason Groom, so we'll swing things over and I'll start with Jim. The Phillies are at number one, and obviously plenty of interesting guys, including Jason Groom, who is a Phillies fan, who said after the game he grew up going to Citizens Bank Park for games. But Jim, who do you like for the Phillies at number one?
Well, I think it's still wide open, but I still think what I've thought for a while is that the Phillies want it to be A.J. Puck of Florida, the lefty who's inconsistent but can show you a mid-90s fastball and a wipeout slider when he's on. You know, he's just so inconsistent, it gets a little bit frustrating. He came off probably his best back-to-back starts of the year at the end of April. And right before Jonathan did his first mock, he went to Tennessee and walked six guys and didn't get out of the fourth inning. Came back last week, pitched well in a loss to Vanderbilt. Interestingly, they have not won any of his last four starts, but he struck out 11 in six innings. He's got a regular season start left and a SEC conference tournament start left before the draft. I think unless he just goes backwards, you know, and it's far from a lock, I think that's the Phillies guy at one.
Jonathan?
Yeah, I'm going back and forth. It does sound like they are leaning back. I had Lewis as their number one pick. I still think if Puck finishes strong, they could flip that. Not that they're going to base it all on just a few starts, but like what Jim said, he had those back-to-back starts. If he had just kept that going, I don't think we would be having a conversation about them switching. But, the Phillies are kind of running all over the place, looking at all sorts of options, and including, Mickey Moniak and Blake Rutherford, two high school outfielders in Southern California, and that would be a cut a deal, maybe look to spend aggressively with their pick at 40 kind of thing. But I think that speaks more to the uncertainty of what's at the top than anything else.
All right, so the Phillies are number one. Up after that is the Cincinnati Reds, and obviously who they pick probably depends a lot on who's off the board from the Phillies at one. But, Jonathan, who do you like for the Reds at two?
Well, if Lewis goes one, in my mock I had A.J. Puck at two. I know he is in their group that they're looking at. They probably have some of the same concerns that the Phillies or anybody has. They could also look bat. Nick Senzel would probably be next on their list. I also had heard that they're looking at Delvin Perez, the high school shortstop out of Puerto Rico, as a possible deal at two. So, I think those are the three names along with Kyle Lewis. So Puck, Senzel, Lewis, and Perez are the four guys that the Reds are considering. So if Lewis comes off the board, I'll stick, for now with what I had on Friday, which is Puck going number two overall.
And I'll kind of keep it simple. I kind of agree with Jonathan. I think they would take Puck if he were there. I guess if I keep it simple, I guess what I would do is if Puck goes one, I would go Lewis two, and if Lewis goes one, I would go Puck two. I've also heard Senzel and Perez there, but I think it's probably Puck or Kyle Lewis. If Puck is gone, I don't really see them taking the high school pitcher, whether it's Jason Groom or Riley Pine or any other college pitcher. I think if Puck is gone, they're taking one of the hitters, and I would probably – lean college a little bit more than high school and say it would be Lewis.
All right. After the Reds, it's the Braves picking third. And the Braves have obviously added so much to that system in the last year or so. Who are they going to add at number three, Jim?
Well, I think this is where it's hard to keep it simple because I think, Puck Lewis or Lewis Puck, okay, I've kind of talked myself into that, although I do reserve the right to change that before I file my mock draft 2.0 for Friday. I think there's all kinds of guys in play here at three. I think this is the highest spot we could see the top two players on the MLB pipeline rankings, Groom or Pint, go, but I don't think it's a lock. I think you hear a lot of talk about how they want a college bat, and I hear differing opinions as to which college bat they like the most. Depending on who you talk to, you can really hear that it's Lewis, or you can hear that it's Corey Ray, or you can hear that it's Nick Senzel. So I think all of those guys are in play as well. And I'd even throw in, you hear, more longer shots, but it could be somebody like, a Josh Lowe or a Braxton Garrett that might be the, I don't think they're going to go that high, but, it's not out of the realm of possibility. So I think it's wide open. I have no idea who I'm going to project on Friday at this point right now.
Come on.
I know I got to pick somebody. I guess if I'm going Puck 1, Lewis 2, I think I might go Nick Senzel, who's been on a little bit of a power tear recently and hit a long home run off A.J. Puck 2 weeks ago. I would go Nick Senzel, but I feel like that one's pretty wide open.
It is. It is. I'm giving you a hard time, but it is a hard one. I had Jason Groom going three. They had just about everybody at that game last night to watch him. And that's not surprising. He's still very much in their mix. But, there is that pull for a college hitter to get someone there faster. Everyone knew they were rebuilding, but the amount they struggled, there might be some pressure to get someone that's perceived to be a guy that would get to the big league quick. So, if I were going to pick one of the college bats, I would pick Senzel over Ray for them at three, but I will, for the sake of argument, stick with Jason Groom at three based on the presence that they had there, and he was obviously really, really good.
All right, number four, Jonathan, Colorado Rockies. Go ahead.
I like how that was my big sigh. I like how we're talking about the top like there's certainty when there really isn't, but it gets more and more confusing. I had Mickey Moniak at four for the Rockies early on, and Jim, tell me if you can corroborate this. All the talk early on was that, the Rockies are looking for pitching. They're looking for pitching. They're looking for pitching. The only pitcher to me that makes sense at four is Riley Pint. And I don't know if they want to, unless Jason Groom is there. And I don't know if they're interested in either one of them. I don't have a strong sense. So I had them taking Moniak, who has much helium. There you go, Tim. As just about anybody of late. So I'll stick with Moniak at four just because I don't have a real good feel for them going for an arm as earlier advertised.
And I'm kind of looking at the same thing. I think you know, if we see, like, in my scenario that I've laid out here where it's Puck, Lewis, Senzel going 1-2-3, I think it comes down to Groom and Pint versus Moniak. You know, again, I sigh. I'm trying to think how I'm going to plot all this out between now and Friday. I would probably lean to give them one of the pitchers, and Jonathan can attest to this. When you're doing mock drafts, you have, you know, you get to point two where you need to get players off the board, even if you aren't sure exactly where they're going to go. My guess is I will be tempted when I do this to give them one of the high school pitchers. I don't really feel like I've got a great sense as to whether they prefer Groom versus Pint. So for now, I'll give them Groom since he's the top-ranked player on our board and he's left-handed.
Hey, you mentioned it, Jonathan, that as you go through this, each pick gets a little harder because you have to base it on who went before and who knows
right.
if those will actually go correctly. So now we get down to number five, and that's the Brewers picking fifth. And Jim, you're on tap here for this one.
Yeah, I think this is probably the highest spot that Delvin Perez, who probably has the highest ceiling of any of the high school position players, this is probably the highest spot he has a real good chance of going. I mean, we've talked about him a little bit earlier, but I think Milwaukee would be more serious. You know, I think they'd think about the high school pitchers. The high school pitchers are going to be the death of me and Jonathan doing this mock draft, not just with Groom and Pint being ranked 1-2 on our current board and, you know, the industry being skittish of taking high school pitchers. And I don't think there's any way that Philadelphia or Cincinnati takes one of those guys at 1 or 2. And then the fact that seven of probably the top 15 prospects in this draft right now are high school pitchers and they all aren't going to go that high, it's going to be a total pain trying to figure out where to put these guys in the draft. But all that said, I could see one of the high school pitchers here, but I've been hearing a lot of Corey Ray at 5. And I think, you know, again, if I was chained to my desk here in my home office and had to bang out the mock draft right now, I would probably go Corey Ray to 5 in Milwaukee. And another reason that kind of makes sense to me a little bit is teams never feel like there's enough college position players. And, you know, there's a clear top three this year in whatever order you want to rank them in. You could kind of shuffle them up, Lewis, Ray, Senzel, or however you want to lay them out. And I don't think they're going to last on the board too long. So I'm going to go Corey Ray here at 5.
Interesting. I'm going to stick with Delvin Perez. Now, I have throughout this whole process we're doing here now, I have the benefit of the fact that I have a mock already done, so I could stick to that script.
To rip your mock from Friday, Jonathan, and just anguish over your poor choices made, but you're not doing that.
Yeah, you've stayed on point.
Because I actually feel pretty – part of me wants to just keep this mock and copy and paste, because I felt pretty good with how things landed. You know, there weren't too many gaping holes and things like that. And Jim mentioned the process of going through this, especially – this, you know, 4 weeks out, the back half can often be ugly, and I actually feel pretty good about this one. So, you know, the Brewers, I know they like Delvin Perez. Ray Montgomery is a scouting director thus far, seems to like upside, so it makes a lot of sense. This was the first spot that I heard Josh Lowe as a possibility, and the one sort of pop-up guy who I didn't have going this high, but I had heard in terms of this neck of the woods being brought in for workouts is Taylor Trammell. And that would be a deal, obviously, up that high. Toolsy outfielder from Georgia. But I'll stick with Delvin Perez there for the time being.
All right, and we're going to stop things at number 6. So one more decision for you guys to make, and I'll start with you, Jonathan. If you stick to that script that you want to do, you have Nick Senzel
yep.
on your mock draft going to the A's at 6.
Yeah, I'll double down on that. I have no problem. I think Jim would probably even agree that if Senzel is there at 6, that might be the guy. Now, I think
I will totally disagree with you when I get to speak, so you're wrong.
Well, please jump in right now.
I was just going to say, I mean, you hear that a lot. So, I mean, it's not like you're out on a limb, but you know, I've seen people write, oh, it's clearly the floor. They have 8 million infielders. All their best prospects, almost all of them are infielders. They've got Matt Chapman, who is not moving off of third base. I just don't think Nick Senzel is the lock that people think he is. And I'm – I cannot claim that I have stalked Eric Kubota, the A's scouting director, and followed him around this spring
because
I have not. I do not think Eric Kubota has seen Nick Senzel yet. And I would find, I mean, obviously, you know, the SEC tournament is coming up, but I would just find it hard to believe that Nick Senzel can be the lock at six that is being written about if the scouting director hasn't even seen the guy play this year. So I mean, a lot of people seem to think that. So you're not out on a limb, Jonathan, but I just don't think that's the lock people think it is.
Yeah, I don't
I'm
know that
take
it's necessarily
the
a lock.
Out and
I just
have
think
him off the board before then anyway. So
that's I just think it's a likely scenario that if he's there. I mean, and they're looking at, you know, all the guys. I mean, in my mock, I had Corey Ray going after. I know they like Braxton Garrett if they wanted to go high school. You know, I think they're looking at a bunch of those high school guys. If Moniak were there, Blake Rutherford, you know, there's probably about seven or eight guys that they could possibly be considering who could all be there at six for them. And then, you know, Zach Collins, the Miami catcher, that's the highest I've heard his name at all. But I think he's a plan B for several teams in the sort of back half of the top ten.
Jim, I think you already had Senzel off the list, right, at this point?
I did. So okay. It would make it even easier for me not to have to deal with that whole situation. I think I have gone Puck, Lewis, Senzel, Groom, Ray. I do think they'd be in the mix for Corey Ray if he was there. I've heard the same thing on Collins, although that's probably a little bit too high. I kind of like the idea of Mickey Moniak here. If he doesn't go higher, say, to Colorado, he'd be, you know, the A's do not have a lot of athletes in their system. I think he'd be a nice fit. He's a floor and a ceiling guy because Mickey Moniak's going to hit, and he can play up the middle, and he can run, and he's got a little bit of power. I would be very tempted to take him regardless of whether I was the A's. If he and Senzel were both on the board, I think you can make a case. If you think Moniak's a center fielder, I think most people do, and you don't think that Lewis or Ray's a center fielder, you could maybe talk yourself into Moniak as the best position player in the entire draft, and you could be right. The other name is kind of a sleeper. You know, I'll throw in a helium. I think, Tim, you're the last person to use the word helium, so you have to take a drink here. But,
I just used it 40 seconds ago. Thanks for listening.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I was trying to formulate my pick. I was trying to focus. I have to take a drink, apparently. Anyway, the guy who I hear has a lot of helium, you know, another one of these high school pitchers, don't be surprised if Matt Manning sneaks into the top 6 or 10 picks. I've heard him with Oakland a little bit, and I've heard, you know, they've had a lot of guys go see Josh Lowe too. So I will go with Mickey Moniak in this scenario, but that's one where, you know, that really could be one too, where, you know, they have their guys lined up, they just figure out which one falls to them ahead of them. You know, it's like I said though, I'm not all in on this. It's Nick Senzel if he's there, because I just don't think you don't draft for need at six, but there's comparable players who would be better fits for them, I think.
All right, and we will see the mock draft 2.0. Will be it's Jim Callis' turn. That'll be out on Friday, and we will go for there as we are quickly approaching the start of the 2016 draft. All right, so let's transition from this year's draft to last year's draft. And last year's draft, at least at the top and through the first round, it was certainly the year of the shortstop. And you wonder always in that first year of pro ball if guys are going to struggle a little bit adapting to pro ball. Well, when you look at the top of the draft from a year ago, certainly not the case, because we'll start with the top three guys, of course, all those shortstops, and they are all off to great starts this season. Let's start with Dansby Swanson, guys. Up to Double-A already. Combined, he's over 300 on the season. No disappointment and no surprise, right, Jonathan? Why don't you start on Swanson? No surprise that he's doing what he's doing in the minors.
No, I mean, you could make the argument that it was a surprise they didn't just start him in Double-A. But, you know, it was good to get him. You got 21 games in A-ball. You know, showed that he was more than capable there and has moved up. And, you know, not that this is surprising, but you know what really stands out? I mean, it's his first full year. He's in Double-A. He's walked more than he's struck out. 23 walks and 20 strikeouts in 37 games, 138 at-bats. That bodes well for avoiding any slumps. Not, again, not surprising. He's showing some extra base pop. He's stealing some bases. He's going to continue to push them as a guy that everyone knew could move really quickly, and he has been as advertised, which is pretty darn good.
Jim?
Yeah, no, I mean, he's been, I think, what we thought he was going to be. You know, hit for average, gap power, control the strike zone, steal bases, play a solid shortstop. It's amazing how productive you can be when Yoan Lopez isn't quick pitching you and hitting you in the face in a simulated game. But, since he recovered from that, he's pretty much hit everywhere he's been and handling Double-A quite easily.
Yeah, and the Braves fans need some good news here with the start they're off to. And today, as we record this, the day that Freddy Gonzalez has been let go as manager. So there is some good news on the horizon. There's actually more than just Dansby Swanson, but certainly a future star, it certainly looks like, in Atlanta in the near future. All right, the number two pick in the 2015 draft was the Houston Astros. They went with Alex Bregman. And Jim, Alex Bregman is really hitting the ball, not just for average, but power as well at Double-A.
Yeah, I'd say he's been better than advertised. He missed a little time with a hamstring injury, but he's got 8 homers in 24 games, went to Double-A to start the year. He's hitting .330. He's got a ops of nearly, it's over 1,100, one of the best ops in the minor leagues. I think that guy's still underrated by fans in general. I actually heard from a lot of Astros fans who couldn't believe that I ranked him ahead of A.J. Reed when I did our Astros top 30, mm-hmm. and I like A.J. Reed a lot. We've talked about him on the podcast, but I just think Alex Bregman is a special hitter. I think he can play. He can get the job done at shortstop. He's not going to play there in Houston because of Carlos Correa. I think he'd be a great fit at second, and you've obviously got Jose Altuve. I think he's their third baseman of the future, and I think that future is going to happen even quicker than expected. I know Colin Moran got promoted shortly before we recorded this, and he may start to usurp some playing time from Luis Valbuena. But I think Alex Bregman is Houston's third baseman of the future. I don't know how you feel, Jonathan, but I think they're comparable hitters. Bregman's got more power. He's a much better athlete and defender and quicker runner and plays with more energy. I mean, Colin Moran's a good prospect, and he was the number 6 overall pick, and they traded for him. And there's talk that if the Astros hadn't taken Mark Appel with the number 1 overall pick in 2013, they would have taken Colin Moran over Chris Bryant, which obviously would not have worked out well. But I don't think Colin Moran does anything as well as Alex Bregman. And I mean that as a compliment to Alex Bregman and not a knock on Colin Moran.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think Colin Moran has the chance to be a solid big leaguer. I think Alex Bregman has a chance to be a dynamic impact type player wherever he ends up playing. He and another team could be an everyday second baseman. Now, maybe if you see Moran really establishing himself, maybe Bregman moves to left field. I know that had been talked about. What's really impressed me with what he's done offensively, I saw him in spring training, and he was changing his setup at the plate to try to change his timing. Which he admitted was a little bit off compared from when he was in college. You do things like that during the offseason and spring training, but he expected some transition period. But I guess it clicked, and he has swung the bat exceedingly well, and it's looking like he is going to put up the kind of offensive numbers that would work just fine at third base if that ends up being where he goes.
Swanson and Bregman are guys from obviously major college programs, and no surprise that they're already up at the Double-A level a year after being drafted. Brendan Rodgers, obviously from the high school ranks, the number 3rd pick of the Rockies, and so therefore he's obviously not as far along. But man, the adjustment for a high school player, you talk about hitting almost .350 right now, 7 home runs as we record this. Jonathan, he is, I guess, after maybe a little disappointment when he first got a taste of pro ball after being drafted, no disappointment this year.
Well, that's why that first summer you kind of have to throw out numbers. Now, you know, if he had a really, really good debut, it may help, especially if the college guy catapult him onto a, more of a fast track. But for a high school kid, first time away from home, you don't worry about it too much. One of the things that I, you know, keep checking on, really, really good home park for hitters in Asheville. And his numbers in Asheville are ridiculous, 388, 461, and a 701 slugging. His away numbers aren't as good, but they're not bad, 302 average, 353, and 492. So it's not like he's not hitting. Now, you know, so it's something just to keep an eye on, because there have been guys who put up ridiculous numbers in Asheville. So it is good to see that he is hitting away from home as well. Strikeout rate isn't terrible. You know, I think there's some concern that there would be some swing and miss. He's drawing some walks, which is also good to see for a guy who's, you know, doesn't turn 20, turns 20 in August. So, yeah, I think everything that he has done is what they could have hoped for when they pushed him to a full season assignment.
And I think even aside from performance, too, which has been very good, and as you noted, you know, benefits from Asheville's park, you know, I think the biggest thing the Rockies were hoping to see out of Brendan this year is just that he was better prepared for the pro grind. He had trouble adjusting to playing 7 days a week. He had a series, nothing too major, but just kind of repeated leg injuries, and missed about half of his pro debut last year when he was in the Pioneer League. And he spent a lot of the offseason working out, you know, getting in the best shape of his life, you're preparing to play a 140-game season. And he's held up very, very well. You know, he looked great in spring training, and he's off to a good start right now, too. And so I think, you know, aside from the performance, they're pleased that he's been able to go out there and play on an everyday basis.
So those were the top three picks, Swanzee, Bregman, and Rogers, a year ago. Do you guys have someone else from that first round that's really stood out to you in their first full pro season? Because I know there's a lot of guys off to good starts.
To me, and I won't. There's about six guys, but to me, the guy who jumps out is Andrew Benintendi, who was the seventh overall pick. I'd be very curious if they redid the draft today, how high he'd go. I mean, I think everybody's pleased with their picks so far, but I don't even know if he'd last seven picks. He's already in Double A. He's hit everywhere he's been. I mean, this year he's got crazy stats where he almost has as many triples and steals as he does strikeouts. He's hitting for average. It's been more gap power. The home run power is going to come. I mean, he led the NCAA in homers last year. He's played a good center field. You know, Andrew Benintendi, you know, you look at these other guys, and, you know, Alex Bregman can find a spot, whether it's at third base or the outfield, or pushes Colin Moran to the outfield, and Dansby Swanson and Ozzy Albies will be double play partners in Atlanta, so Swanson will wind up at short or second. You know, where are they going to jam Benintendi into that Red Sox outfield? That'll be interesting to see, and he might be ready, you know, by opening day next year at the rate he's going. I mean, he is not slowed down, and he is torn the cover off the ball everywhere he's been so far in his brief pro career.
How about you, Jonathan? Who's the guy? Benintendi, obviously, already up to Double A, has been very impressive. That just recently happening. Who do you like from that first round?
So from the first round,
you can take a second rounder if you want too. I was just, you know.
No, I'll stick with the first round. Okay. I mean, you know, Kristen Stewart is kind of an interesting guy. You know, he's the Tigers. You know, they got him with at the very end of the first round, and everyone talked about the power, but will he hit enough? And he's, you know, he's racked up some strikeouts. He's got 40 strikeouts already. He's only hitting 257, but the reports about his power were not exaggerated. And I remember I was in Tigers camp this spring, and they were talking about early on in spring before minor league camp had officially opened, he was just crushing the ball. And he is in Lakeland still in the Florida State League, which, mind you, is a pitcher's league. He leads the minors in homers. He's got 13 homers so far. He's slugging 603. So you've got a lot to watch the strikeout totals. He's, you know, he's walked 23 times also, so that helps. He may never be the kind of guy who hits for a ton of average, but that is some serious power in a league that normally does not see those kinds of power numbers. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if he's still putting up the power numbers, I have to think that he gets bumped up to double A maybe for the second half. The swing and miss, you know, they probably want him to get enough reps before they try to push him and challenge him with that assignment to the Eastern League. But he's kind of an interesting guy because that's one of those tools that everyone, you know, wants to have, and it's kind of hard to come by, that in-game power. And so far he's been showing that he has more than enough of it.
Great stuff, guys, as always. Make sure you check out Jim Callis' mock draft coming up on Friday. And, of course, all your prospect news on MLBPipeline.com. This has been the Pipeline Podcast presented by John Deere. For Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next week.